Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Talk a little bit about Charles Barkley today. He was part of the broadcast for the golf match between Tom Brady, Phil Mickelson versus Tiger Woods and Peyton Manning. He was funny.
The match.
Seth, did you stick around long enough to watch Barkley try to bogey number 18 at the end of the round?
Oh, no, I didn't see that.
Yeah. Turns out it was recorded earlier, which probably made sense because it was getting dark. By the time they finished that round, it was getting dark. He did not bogey the hole. It was a par four, a very difficult par four, and he wound up with a six. So he almost bogeyed. He double bogeyed.
But you got to see that iconic swing of his.
Yeah, his drive was like a 40-yard worm burner. Like it skidded along the ground for about 40 yards. So he was kind of behind the eight ball. Then he actually put himself in position for a birdie putt, or not a birdie putt, but a putt for a bogey that he missed, and then he tapped in for a six. If Charles were to ever be added to part of normal network golf coverage, I would demand that they do a feature where he has to try to bogey the hardest hole on the course each time.
Oh, that's actually, you know what, that's an everyman's challenge, isn't
it? Yeah, yeah.
And Barkley has that weird ability to come off like an everyman, despite being one of the best athletes that this country has seen in the last 50 years. He just still somehow also feels like, oh, that could be my best friend's father, who's kind of a blowhard drunk and always bragging about his high school days.
Yeah.
You never quite believe that he was a stud athlete back in the day.
It feels like he was one of those athletes that was a very specific athlete. You know what I mean? Like, he was a basketball player and that's it. I don't think we're going to see stories of Barkley being on the football team when he was growing up in Alabama, or baseball, or someone who swings a golf club like that cannot have a good throwing motion. It's just that's the rule. Like, there's no way that you can have that kind of golf swing and have a proper throwing motion.
I will say, we've talked about this at various times during that Michael Jordan documentary, where we've asked, okay, who would we want to have one of these done about? And I can't believe Charles Barkley never came up. Because Barkley is an interesting person. This might be one of the most interesting people alive. Not just because he says nonsensical things at times on air. He's just lived an interesting life. I bet there's some pretty cool stuff. Some stuff happened to Barkley in childhood. That kid went through some hardships of some sort.
Well, he was.
You don't end up that funny without being kind of messed up at some point.
He grew up with his mom and his grandmother. I know that. So he's somebody whose weight fluctuated. Like, he was fat at Auburn and was amazing at basketball, and then he got in shape when he got to the NBA. He's very interesting just in terms of being super funny. But he was also somebody, Seth, who was routinely in trouble in the NBA. Not trouble like he was failing drug tests or trouble like domestic violence and stuff like that, but he was routinely getting into shenanigans off the court. Like the one time where he most famously threw a very, very small person through a plate glass window because he was getting jerky with him.
But he was okay in that instance. As I recall, he was let off in that circumstance.
He was. I'm just saying there's stories like that that float around him. You know, we would get more clarity on stories like that in a documentary.
Well, it was like when Scottie Pippen would say that he would apologize at gunpoint, and Charles said, you know, I carry a gun with me.
which
today feels like it would have been a bigger deal than back then. It was really funny. He said that in Houston. Everybody laughed and laughed. Right. I could recognize a lot of our media members. If he said that today, it would probably be a whole bunch of people like, oh, am I allowed to laugh at that?
Right. Barkley advocates gun violence is how the headline would read. So Charles Barkley was on Zach Lowe's podcast this past week. And he actually talked about his time with the Rockets. It was an interesting, if you're a Barkley fan, it's a very interesting listen because Zach Lowe does a really good job of kind of going through the different stages of Barkley's career. You know, the different trades, the fallout in Philadelphia, the trade from Phoenix to Houston, his time here in Houston. And I believe Barkley is honest when he says things. He's unfiltered. I don't know that I completely believe him when he said this, though.
I wouldn't even count it that as a championship. I'm not even going to lie. Like, me and Karl Malone, like, they had won a championship with the Lakers. That doesn't count. that doesn't count. But, you know, the Rockets called me, and Scottie wanted to try to win without Michael. But, first of all, that was never going to happen because he had a really good team in Portland. If he wasn't going to win with that team, he was never going to win without Michael.
So that's Barkley, in the beginning of that is him saying, basically, Charles feels like, Seth, if he had won a title when he was here in Houston, he wouldn't have really counted it.
Yeah, which I don't buy at all, right? Zach Lowe just kind of walked him into a – Zach Lowe does, very politely asked him about, like, oh, hey, didn't you kind of do the same thing? And
like because, the super team kind of thing.
Yeah, because Barkley's been very, very critical of the super team. I don't get any of the old school guys hating on young guys for – exercising the influence and power they have, because otherwise, I'm what's the alternative? That no, you should just sit there and take it and just rely on dumb luck. Like LeBron should have just stayed in Cleveland the whole time he was younger, when they probably never would have done anything to actually get him into position to win a championship, and LeBron never would have wielded the power and influence that he did by the time he returned to Cleveland. I don't understand where somehow the noble thing to do is to just sit on your hands if you get drafted into a bad organization and just and hope it works out for you.
Nobody's saying these guys should be held hostage, Seth, but I do feel like someone like Kevin Durant, who went to a team that won 73 games the year before, that when Kevin Durant, who's clearly inside the velvet rope of all-time great players, right? Like Kevin Durant's one of the 20 greatest players of all time, let's call it. That if we're starting to make arguments where we're comparing Kevin Durant to all-time greats, and where does he stack up with LeBron? Where does he stack up with Kobe? Where does he stack up with whoever, Bird? You know, just the fact that, and to be inside that velvet rope, you need to win championships. And he has. He's won two championships, and he's been to a couple other finals. To me, the fact that his two championships were won with this just sort of ready-made super team, that granted, he was the best player on, but I don't know, that to me, if I'm sitting there arguing in a court of law over who the best player is of all time and I'm arguing against Kevin Durant, I'm going right at that. I'm going, this guy took a contract to go with a team that won 73 games and he didn't do it the hard way. You know, like that in those nuanced type of arguments, it matters. Again, it shouldn't diminish his greatness as a player, but when you're starting to do comparisons, to me, that kind of stuff matters.
Right, but I guess that's right. I feel like people act like the Golden State situation was every other situation. They talk about these super teams, and they like lump all these other teams in with the Golden State Warriors, where that was a once in a lifetime occurrence. Because for one, I blame Chris Paul, because the players union didn't want to slowly ramp up the salary cap. They just allowed, you dumped all this cap space on. Yeah. It allowed Kevin Durant to go to the Warriors in a situation that would never exist otherwise in a normal cap environment. And that's it. Like, that's the one-off occurrence. Maybe it happens again 30 years from now or something. But it's not the same as, like, what Charles did back in the day. Or I'd say even what it's not what LeBron did in Cleveland. I think those are different categories of super teams.
I think a big reason why people feel differently, I think a big reason why people feel, maybe felt is a better way to put it, because I think people are over the LeBron super team in Miami, air quotes, super team. Because he went back to Cleveland, because he won a title in Cleveland, because he beat a 73-win team to win that title in Cleveland. And you realize, too, that once, even when he ganged up with Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh, it was still a struggle to win championships. But I think it was the way LeBron did it that got everybody angry. Like the fact that he did his own made-for-TV special where people, you know, felt like he stabbed Cleveland right in the heart on national TV, that rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. As far as the Rockets go with Barkley, look, I was here when that whole thing went down. There's still a lot of people to this day that feel like the Rockets shouldn't have made that trade. So it's hard to call that one, if they had won a title, a super team that's, and maybe they feel that way because that team ultimately didn't win a championship. But Robert Horry and Sam Cassell were two very, very popular players here and two massive parts of the two championships. And even if the Rockets had gone on to win a title with Barkley, I still feel like there would have been a faction of Rocket fans that felt, a little betrayed may not be the right word, but just a little bent out of shape that they had to trade Robert Horry and Sam Cassell to do it. So the Barkley, Hakeem, Clyde, and then ultimately Pippen one is a little different to me because those were all players clearly on the end of the back nine of their career that were trying to squeeze another title, or in the case of Barkley, a title into their career resume.
Like what if Patrick Ewing had done the same thing? If at the end of his career somehow he was able to go to the Warriors for three seasons, and so would Patrick Ewing be viewed differently in his pantheon of where they are? Or would you completely discount those? Because otherwise he doesn't have a championship.
I think the factor is, Seth, how big a part of the championship are they? If Barkley had come here and they'd won a championship, Barkley would have been a big part of that championship. He was either the second or third best player on that team behind Hakeem Olajuwon, and he made sacrifices in his game to fit into that. I think when you're talking about Ewing, you're talking about a guy who probably would have been at the tail end of his career kind of hanging. Like Karl Malone.
Oh, let's say.
Barkley brought up Karl Malone. Yeah. Karl Malone's title, if they had won one with the Lakers, definitely would not be viewed as, well, finally Karl Malone can get into the velvet rope. You got to be a guy who leads the team. You can't be the fourth best player.
Yeah, and I guess that's where I would say, like, instead of at the tail end of his career, I don't know, like in the mid-90s, when he's 32 years old or so, then he all of a sudden, like after a whole lot of success personally and whatnot, but without a championship, if he were to go to the equivalent of a Super Bowl, well, at that point, if he goes to the Bulls, you know,
right.
if he had left out, yeah, let's say if Ewing had gone to play for the Bulls in 1990, like 92 or 93 or something,
yeah.
Boy, yeah, then he would not,
well,
he wouldn't have the same, it wouldn't have vaulted him up to any higher than he is right now. Like his status is pretty much whatever he established with the Knicks.
Yeah, he lost to the Rockets in 94. So let's say he gets frustrated in New York, says, I don't think I can win here. And then Michael comes back in 95, and then Patrick's like, that's where I want to go. And
yeah, that would be it.
Right, and he's part of one or two or three championships with the Bulls. Is Patrick Ewing viewed differently? I think it depends on how integral a part he is of that whole thing.
You know,
like how crucial was he to winning it?
Patrick Ewing, by the way, home from the COVID.
Yeah, oh yeah, that's right. He did. He had the COVID over the weekend, and he is home.
There's another one where you feel like, oh yeah, he's old.
Right.
I forgot. Yeah, he's old now, just like the other people that are,
Yep. Are student athletes in college safer on campus than they are at home? We'll talk about that next. Seth Payne, Sean Pendergast with you. All right, so if we're keeping tabs on the sports coming back. Baseball, they're back in the building. Big staring contest coming this week. Hopefully they find a solution. Basketball, they're having conference calls with all the players and kind of getting towards what looks like a solution. That one looks a little less messy, Seth. The NBA looks a little less messy than baseball right now. But once baseball figures the dollars out, that should move pretty quickly.
Baseball, I think the owners threw this out there as a way to like try to get as much as they can because they're billionaires. This is how billionaires get to be billionaires. They're sharks. They try to take advantage of every situation, right? You can find fault with that, whatever. They're sharks. So the players appropriately did not say yes to their first offer. They would have been morons because the players had already agreed to take an effective pay cut. So I think that the owners are trying to get what they could to hedge their bets, but they're ultimately going to realize, all right, we got to get these games played. We can figure out the dollars and cents later. None of us are going broke off of this current deal. So let's quit being little punks and just get to work.
Yeah.
Punks, I tell them.
Punks. Well, these punks might expand the playoffs, which should get them a little more money to make up the difference. Because playoff baseball is a much more valuable commodity than regular season baseball. To the extent, Seth, that I feel like they're going to try to maximize the number of playoff games they get. So we got to watch what the strike zone looks like in those playoff games. You know what I mean? If a team's down 3-1, you think maybe like the Manfred gets in the ear of the umpiring crew, like, hey, let's make this interesting. All right. You know, we got to watch that. Like,
this is the one year that they're definitely every not series, going to an electronic ump this year.
Right. Every series. That's exactly right. Every series goes seven games.
Was it? Now, this is an interesting one. Not to get too far into the dollars and accounting on all of this, but in baseball, the local TV broadcast is a big deal. That's where you make a whole bunch of your money. The playoffs is national money that gets distributed, right? Not necessarily completely evenly, but whatever. It's national money, or you're not getting your regional network as much. I wonder with teams like, was it the A's that just was going to broadcast by streaming this
year? Yes, yeah.
It was the A's. The A's weren't even going to have an over-the-air broadcast. It was going to be all streaming.
Right.
That just for the radio broadcast.
Yes.
I think they were still going to have television.
For the radio.
For the radio, they weren't even going to do like an actual radio broadcast. They were going to do nothing but streaming. Obviously, like, the A's aren't making as much money off of their broadcasting as teams like the Yankees. I would imagine the Yankees and some of these other teams that have incredible TV deals are really going to be pushing for as much of a regular season as possible.
Yeah. Well, and I think the flip side of that is that, yeah, they will be pushing for the regular season because you know why, Seth? You get that TV money whether there's fans or not. The problem is for teams like the Astros that have a crappy TV deal here locally where they don't make nearly as much as their payroll would seem to indicate they make. So they require that game day revenue. They're more reliant on that game day revenue at the stadium, whether it's tickets or concessions or parking or whatever. Proportionally, they're way more reliant on that than some of the big market teams are with big TV contracts. They're even more reliant on it now because they have a payroll where they're out there trying to pee with the big boys, you know?
Right. But I would also say, though, too, in some of those teams are, like the Yankees, the money, there is more money to be made because they own part of the network, too.
Yeah.
So, like, some of these teams, I think the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Blue Jays, and a few others, they own part of their television network. Yeah. So whatever the deal is the deal, but then the extra revenue, if people are paying more for advertising, then they're making more money.
Yeah. So we've got baseball, we've got basketball. Football is just, at least outwardly, just staying on the same path right now. They haven't made any move to say we're not going to have fans or we're moving the season. College football is the one that has the most moving parts because it's the most unique of the sports geographically. It's the most unique of the sports culturally because there are educational institutions tied to these teams and whatnot. And as we look at the opening back up of the country, but especially within sports, I don't think it's a big surprise that the SEC and the Big 12 both made announcements late last week that football players are going to be allowed on campus. I want to say June 8th for one of them, June 15th for the other. It's within the first couple weeks of June that football players, and then subsequent to that, other fall sport athletes will be allowed. And eventually all athletes will be back allowed on campus, assuming that the winds don't change with the coronavirus. The Pac-12 has always been the conference, Seth, that to me has been the diciest one of the Power Five because it's got California in it, and California has been, understandably, one of the more reserved states in terms of reopening and sports and shutting things down, so forth. Larry Scott is the commissioner of the Pac-12. I want to read something to you that he said in an interview with CNN and see, especially as a former collegiate athlete, if you agree with this. He says, we've got three states in our conference where gyms are already open and student athletes are wanting to get back. In most cases, we feel that student athletes will be in a safer position and a healthier position if they can have access to the world-class medical care, supervision, and support that they can get on their campuses. And if there are issues with the virus, to have access to these world-class medical centers that we have. So basically, Larry Scott is saying that, hey man, athletes, why don't you get back over here because we can take better care of you than if you're at home. I will say this, that from a supervision standpoint, it's probably easier with the athletes being on campus. You've got coaches, you've got strength coaches, nutritionists. Basically, they're under a much more watchful eye, especially a football team where you've got 85 scholarship guys. All it takes is a couple of them to kind of go off the grid and you bring them back and they've got the coronavirus or whatever the case may be. But I tend to agree with Larry Scott, actually, that bringing the athletes back and having them in a more controlled environment, especially with the access to the medical care that the athletes have, is kind of a big deal. So that's the big conference that, to me, the Pac-12 and the Big Ten are the two, because I feel like any schools that are in the South, the lines on this thing are going to start to get drawn like the Civil War, where it's the schools in the South that are gung-ho and ready to get back at it, and then the schools that are up North are just operating a little more slowly. For example, the Michigan president is he's about as negative as it gets when it comes to the coronavirus. If you haven't seen what the Michigan president has said, he basically says that without on-campus instruction, schools will not have collegiate athletics. So I don't know how much of the Big Ten agrees with him. Nebraska's in the Big Ten. They're bringing student athletes back on campus. But part of the problem with realignment is these conferences made themselves gigantic, and the Big Ten all of a sudden has New York and Washington, D.C. in it through having Rutgers and Maryland. So we'll see where it goes. Text message. Seth is getting back online. Text message. This goes back to our Deshaun Watson conversation in the previous segment, where we talked about Deshaun Watson getting into a potential staring contest with the Texans if Patrick Mahomes signs first. If you're Deshaun, the only argument you need to make is, quote, you overpaid for all these other guys you brought in just because they're, quote, good guys. I'm a good guy and the most important part of this team. Why aren't you going to treat me the same way? That would be my argument if I were Deshaun Watson. Look, it's tough for Deshaun to put together an argument that he's better than Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes won an MVP. Patrick Mahomes won a Super Bowl. Patrick Mahomes has put statistical seasons together, particularly in 2018, where he was breaking records. He was setting all kinds of marks. The best argument for Deshaun, and by the way, you could argue that if you're Deshaun, that part of the reason why Patrick Mahomes puts up such great numbers is he's been surrounded by a better supporting cast over the last couple of years in Kansas City. But it's a valid argument. It would suck to be an argument that Deshaun would have to make because you're pointing out, hey, my center, Nick Martin, makes $11 million a year. He's a little overpaid. My left tackle, Laremy Tunsil, makes $22 million a year. You exceeded the previous high contract by $4 million. Hey, Whitney Mercilus, he's a really good guy. I love Whitney Mercilus. He makes $13 million a year. He's never made a Pro Bowl. That's where you're Deshaun. You just let your agent do all the talking. Here's what I want you to say. You say it so I don't have to say it. All right, 713-572-4610 if you want to hit us, if you want to hit us on the text page. I was looking at the standings in the NBA, and if you haven't heard, Brian Windhorst of ESPN.com has talked about the possibility that the NBA could go teams 1 through 16 in the postseason. He said there's a good chance that they could do that. It would make sense. If that's what they've wanted to do all along, it would make sense to do that, because the only thing that was preventing them from doing it before was travel, where if you wind up with a West Coast team and an East Coast team playing in the first round of the playoffs, you know, you get Boston and one of the LA teams in the first round of the playoffs. Now you're talking about a first round where teams are getting on planes that are going 5-hour trips both ways. But I'm looking at the overall league standings right now. So if you're wondering, if you've seen that report from Brian Windhorst that the league is looking to do that, to go teams 1 through 16, as opposed to separating it into an Eastern Conference and a Western Conference, then the Rockets would be the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 seed. So the Rockets would be the 10 seed in the overall NBA right now. That's a pretty live 10 seed. I know people probably still have a little bit of an aftertaste for what small ball was doing going into this pandemic hiatus that they're on right now. But with a couple months to rest and with James Harden looking like he's getting ready to run marathons, that's a pretty live 10 seed. They would be playing the Jazz in the first round of the playoffs. A 7 versus 10 Jazz would be Jazz series would be pretty sweet. If they just kept it as the conferences, if they just went straight to the playoffs and kept it as an Eastern and Western Conference, the Rockets would be traveling to Denver. And if I've seen correctly, I think the Rockets would be favored in that series. So the Rockets would actually be favored as a 6 seed in that series if they were to have to travel to Denver. So yeah, there you go. The Rockets would be a 10 seed in an overall 1 through 16 NBA world that we're living in right now. All right, final segment of the show coming up, and we will talk about the match from Sunday. How replicable is that special golf event that was put on Sunday? We'll talk about that next. All right, Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610. Text message, Rutgers University is in New Jersey. I know, I meant the New York City area. I know it's in New Jersey. Thank you. I grew up in that part of the country. I'm aware.
Wait, what did they correct you on?
On where Rutgers is. I was making a point in the previous segment about how the realignment in college football has contributed to the kind of unruliness or how unwieldy it is to try to come up with a policy on starting a season, because these conferences all went on these land grabs back 10 years ago because of TV reasons. So now you've got the Big Ten, which used to be just a few Midwestern states. Now they've got Nebraska and New Jersey in this thing. But I said New York, and I meant New York.
Oh, all right. Oh, okay. So somebody had to, like, somebody, some proud New Jerseyan.
Right. I got actually on the actual location of the great University of Rutgers.
It's always good to point out that Princeton is also in New Jersey.
It is.
Like, anytime. Anyone you want to take anybody down a notch or two, just point out that it is indeed in New Jersey.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, indeed it is. So, Seth, do you think we see any more of these events like they put on for us on Sunday with the golf, with the Manning in the Woods versus the Brady and the Phil?
I think that over the course of the next month, I think there's going to be a rush to throw a bunch of these things together because they're moneymakers, right? Like, you got 5 million people watching this yesterday. The participants involved get to raise a whole bunch of money for a good cause, and there's almost zero production costs. They don't have to do anything. They just got a few camera people out there. It's incredible.
They all came off looking good too. That was the one thing that if you're looking at the reaction to it, and we're talking about the golf match between Peyton Manning, Tiger Woods, where they beat Tom Brady and Phil Mickelson. Other than people who had money on it, I don't think people cared what the outcome was. I think they were just more entertained by the banter, more entertained by how much insight you got into the process of making some golf shots by watching these guys as they're mic'd up, telling their partners, the pro golfers that is, telling their football playing partners how to line up a putt, where, you know, how to read a green and things like that. That was all really, really interesting stuff. They all got major accolades for doing, you know, every tweet that I saw, kudos to all four guys involved. My favorite was when somebody, one of the commentators, said that you got to give these guys credit for being out here playing in the rain. And I'm thinking to myself, it's not like it's raining razor blades or something like that. Like, it's water falling out of the sky. Like, somebody actually said, you got to give these guys credit for playing in the rain. And I suppose if they were playing through a thunderstorm with major lightning, then there's a risk factor. Other than that, they're just getting wet.
Well, I would say, though, too, that, you know, with Mickelson and Woods, at least, you've got your pride as a professional out there when you're playing in bad weather conditions. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like if you're Manning or Brady, I look at bad weather conditions as, oh, okay, if I have a bad shot, not shot now, I can just blame it on this, where the pros can't do that. I also thought, golf might be the best sport ever in terms of these events where you have a pro-am or something. Like, what other sports can you get out and actually play alongside one of the best players in the world without completely mucking it all up? Because they get to play their own game. You're going to be moving a little bit slower than they're accustomed to, obviously, I'm sure. Maybe not, actually, because I don't give a damn about setting up my shots. I can get seven shots in way before a pro gets in four shots, Sean.
Are you a decent golfer?
I never stop swinging. No. I'm a horrible golfer.
Are you okay?
But I will play fast. Yeah. I'll take eight swings to get it there as fast as possible.
No reason to line it up.
I'll just keep jogging down the fairway. I don't need the cart. No, thank you.
There you go.
But no other sport where, like, that's just, you can get out and play that sport alongside one of the greatest golfers, a couple of the greatest golfers who ever lived. That's pretty cool. So, like, I think there was that aspect to it, that even though Manning and Brady are who they are, I just kind of kept putting myself in the position of, like, if sure would be nice to have Mickelson lining up my shot instead of my stupid brother-in-law. Yeah. maybe then I'd be a scratch golfer.
But it is the sport, though. You're right, Seth, because think about the flip side of this. I was thinking about this when they were all standing there with the cardboard check afterwards. I'm like, okay, what would happen if you had to flip it around, and now Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson need to play football.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, Tiger, when he was at his peak physically, when he was doing all the Navy SEAL stuff, and he was, honestly, all the stuff that wound up ruining his body, like killing his knees and killing his back because he was so yoked up. Like, Tiger at his peak looked like a safety. You know what I mean? Like, he's long, he's rangy, he built up a pretty nice muscle base.
Yeah.
Phil, I feel like, would be more
sexual endurance beyond compare.
Yeah, yeah, as we've learned. Right, right. With very little with very little threshold for the quality of the actual partner as well. Phil, I feel like if you were to flip him over to football, would be either a punter or a very, very fringe backup quarterback.
I think punter's probably right. Yeah. Right. He'd be a hard partying Raiders kicker.
Right.
He'd be a Sebastian Janikowski type, but just a little bit more suave.
Yeah.
You know, he'd be the punter that like was known about, like the ladies' man about town. That he was just, he was a suave, debonair bachelor.
Likes to gamble. Back when he was younger. Like that. Yeah.
Then he got married and all that.
Right. Stuff, right. But. Right.
By the way, JJ was watching, JJ Watt. He tweeted out, "That was fun. Thanks for the entertainment, Tom Brady, Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson." And
yeah, they brought him on for a little hit.
So Tom Brady responded, "Well said, JJ. Thanks to all who made today possible. Match part three, you and I square off in some Oklahoma drills." So another example of what you're talking about. If you like, Tom Brady can't get out there and even play the. Okay, this is how highly segmented football is. Football players themselves couldn't go out and do a competition where they're competing or playing alongside. Like, a defensive lineman can't get out there and cover receivers alongside his favorite defensive back, right?
Right.
They can't even do it within their own sport, whereas these football players can get out. And obviously, they're not as good nearly, but they can play alongside those guys. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, well, and they don't look it's like Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. Maybe if you're a golf doctor, you know, like a golf coach, you looked at their swing and said, yeah, these swings look totally different. And Tiger and Phil, like to me, to like the uneducated eye, like if it were just on a TV in a bar somewhere and I wasn't looking at who was playing, like I wouldn't have looked up at Peyton Manning and Tom Brady swinging their clubs and saying, boy, that guy looks like a complete hack right there. Now, with Brady, I was saying it when I was watching where the ball was going, and I'm sure there was some little quirk in his swing that was preventing him from, you know, getting a par on any of the first seven holes. But they blended in fine in that ecosystem.
That is one where I wish I if they were to do it, this wouldn't be fair to the football players involved, but I'd like to see them do it like on a PGA course done for PGA, like with fast greens and all that. Because that's what they'll tell you too, is like you might think you're a scratch golfer, but then go play on a PGA course and the way they have that thing set up and where all the pin placements are and everything, and you're not a scratch golfer anymore. I'd love to see the difference between those two.
We're just in dry weather. You know, in theory, the wet weather helps you if you've got no clue as to where the ball, how the ball is going to skip and things like that. The other thing that had me excited about it, Seth, is Tiger looked good. And I know it wasn't a high-pressure situation in terms of the competition, although Tiger's probably one of those guys that competes like that all the time, you know, that finds a way to turn a Sunday like that into the Masters. But he looked good. Like, he was hitting fairways routinely. I think 2020 owes us quite a bit of things here. The year 2020 owes us, as sports fans, quite a bit of stuff. And one of the things I feel like they owe us is a healthy Tiger Woods when these golf tournaments start back up.
You know what I will say about 2020? They've done a good job so far. Most of the celebrity deaths have been people whose, you know, time had come.
Right.
There are a lot of celebrities like Ben Stiller's dad. He passed away. Several other, it seems like so far most of the notable celebrities have been people where you don't feel like you don't feel like they're being robbed from us, right? You don't feel like you're missing out on somebody and they were stolen in their prime. These are people that led good, healthy lives.
We had this conversation yesterday at the dinner table at Amy's parents' house. How are we going to feel about 2020 if this is finally when we lose Betty White?
Oh, goodness. Well, I would say
she's 98 years old.
Yeah, she had a very good run, did she not?
She did. She has. Yeah, so she still is.
Yeah. Like Fred Willard passed away. He's 86.
86.
You guys might. He was always in all those mockumentaries, Best in Show, Anchorman. This is Spinal Tap. He was on a lot of those. So he passed away. He was a very youthful looking, but in his 80s. I think also Phyllis George. She was 70. So young by today's standards, but still. Of an age where it's not a huge shock.
Yeah,
in the system.
Yeah.
I credit you, 2020, for at least getting this right.
Yeah. Congratulations. You got one section of the test right. The rest of it, you're failing miserably, 2020. Text message. Brady did not come out looking good. Everyone's trying to make out like that one lucky shot made him look good. It did not. He played like crap. Were you listening, Texter? That's what I said. He played like crap. I said his swing looked like he blended in fine with those other guys. To the average layperson. I'm sure that somebody who coaches golfers would look at those four swings and they would say, okay, those two, and especially that one, does not look like the others. But to me, someone who has a horrific golf swing, I look at the four, and someone who doesn't watch golf every weekend, I just watch the four of them, and all I said was if I was at a bar and I was watching that out of the corner of my eye, then I would have said, oh, those are four very athletic guys golfing right over there.
Brady came out looking good, too, because by sucking, it looked like he'd been worried more about playing football over these past few months. He's actually been throwing to wide receivers and whatnot instead of playing golf all the time. Peyton Manning looks like a man that's been playing a whole lot of golf. Manning, like, frankly, people ask why isn't Manning taking this Monday Night Football job or that job or what have you. I'm guessing he's making about $100,000 per speech when he's out there on the motivational speaking tour. I'm guessing he makes a cool 50 G's at least every time he gets invited to play a round of golf with a certain group of dignitaries or whatnot. I think that Peyton Manning is looking at working a 17-game Monday Night Football schedule and saying like, oh, instead of getting paid to play golf or give speeches on each of those weekends, go screw yourself.
Right. Because it's not a one-day job. You got to go do production meetings and things like that.
Little Richard also passed away just a little bit. But again, he was 87.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Roy Horn from Siegfried and Roy was 75.
Right. Yeah.
I haven't come across somebody's take. Don Shula, just last week. How old was Don Shula?
He was like 90. I mean, he was really.
I think he was 143. Played in the football for 27 years, That's right.
Text message, I wouldn't mind seeing football/baseball players bowling or playing poker.
Oh, yeah, poker. I wonder, celebrity poker still a thing
on
ESPN?
I don't know.
Are they still pushing that or not? When didn't they have a celebrity pecker, poker going on? Celebrity pecker, that's Twitter. So celebrity Twitter.
I was about to say you mix them in with a few Kardashians at the poker table. They would definitely be there for celebrity pecker.
Celebrity pecker with Brett Favre. So let me tell you, speaking of Kardashians, I had a little scary moment a couple nights ago. I was laying in bed, and my wife and I were, you know, being a loving married couple of 20 years, which by that I mean we were both reading our phones, just doing whatever,
right.
Just ignoring each other, blissfully in love, ignoring each other while we're on our phones.
On Twitter. You know?
And all of a sudden she wheels around and she's like she didn't say it angrily or anything, but she wheels her phone to me all of a sudden. She was like, who do you think this looks like? And it was a picture of an attractive woman. Who is this? And I'm like, oh, crap. Am I being accused of something I did with somebody who I don't even know? Oh, no. You know, like that feeling where, you know, when you're a kid and you think you might be in trouble for something you definitely didn't do.
Right.
To where you start getting frazzled and then you start thinking like, oh, I look like I'm guilty.
That was you.
But it was Khloe Kardashian. And she didn't ask it in an accusing way at all. And my wife's not like, she's not one to look at my text messages or anything. It was just completely out of, and so apparently Khloe Kardashian has done something where she looks completely different. And I'm looking at her. So then I'm desperately trying to think like, do I actually know this woman? I have no clue.
Okay, so she knew it was Khloe Kardashian. She spun around and showed it to you and said, who is this? And you at first thought that Brandy was accusing you of something.
Yes, of doing something with a woman that's prettier than Khloe Kardashian.
Right.
Because whoever this is a new and improved version of Khloe Kardashian.
What was the difference?
I couldn't tell. I guess that's a big thing right now, trying to figure out what Khloe had done.
Okay.
Because I think it might be, it seems to me, now I've given this about 20 seconds of research, and it was my wife telling me whatever the hell was going on.
Yeah.
It seems to me like she had something done, but nobody can quite figure it out, but she definitely looks different. Kind of like maybe Renee Zellweger. Was it Renee Zellweger? Yeah, Renee Zellweger, I think people thought that she had done all kinds of crazy surgery, but maybe she just did one thing.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay. Text message.
Oh, no, you know what? Not Renee Zellweger. You know what I'm thinking of is Baby from Dirty Dancing.
Oh, Jennifer Grey.
Jennifer Grey got a little bit of a tiny nose job, but it changed her look completely and entirely.
Did it change it to the better? I'm trying to remember. Because she did have Ben Gary is nodding in here.
Yes, oh, yeah,
it changed
yeah.
it to the better.
It turned her into like a hot girl, where before she was just kind of like, oh, Patrick Swayze would never dance with her.
I kind of really liked her. I thought she was cute in Dirty Dancing and in Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I thought,
Sean, it's because you're 12, okay? It's because you're 12 and horned up.
Like,
and then he's
17. I thought she... I kind of liked her, you know?
I'm going to tell you right now.
Making out with Charlie Sheen in the police station there in Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
She had a quality about her.
She had
a little panache to her.
Yeah, she wasn't hot, but I thought she was kind of cute.
I'm going to say Jennifer Grey at her current age of 60 is probably hotter than Jennifer Grey pre-nose job.
Interesting.
And I'm not a big fan of nose jobs, but apparently she did it just right.
I'm not either, but I came up – let me see what you think of my idea. I came up with this when Amy and I were at Kirby Ice House this weekend. We went to like six bars on Saturday, proper social distance, the whole nine yards. But we were at Kirby Ice House, and the servers there had masks on. Mm-hmm. And some of them are very attractive, but you can't tell like what their face looks like because they have a mask on, right?
That's so alluring. Yeah.
Right. But you can see their hair and their eyes and obviously their body and things like that. And I said, Amy, this is a really good idea that I have right now. What if you had a season of The Bachelor where you had the 24 bachelorettes? They all had to wear masks throughout the whole season.
Yeah.
And he had to choose, and they had to wear masks when they're around him. And half of them are empirically attractive without the mask. Half of them are empirically attractive everywhere except underneath the mask, under which they've got like either a gigantic nose or teeth that looks like they could eat corn on the cob through a tennis racket or a jagged scar or something like that.
Aww.
But they're not allowed to take their masks off the whole season. And he falls in love ultimately with one of them for who they are and who they are in the 98% of that he can see. But there's a 50-50 chance he winds up with a bachelorette that has some really, really nasty features underneath the mask.
That feels mean.
What do you think of that?
I don't know. It feels so it would probably do really well.
Right. I think people would watch. I'm not here for people's feelings. I'm here to make money for the network.
Yeah, because you'll say like, hey, yeah, but the ugly people are in on it and they're cool with it. I'm like, yeah, but that's part of the – makes it even sadder. That's why I can't – I used to watch American Idol all the time, and I got to the point where I couldn't watch the opening rounds anymore because basically what it is hey, let's make fun of the delusional mentally ill people.
William Hung.
You start to realize after a while like, oh – these people aren't just a little bit weird. They're crazy, and I feel bad for them. They're being humiliated on a national television.
Yeah.
And a lot of times they've got family members encouraging them to do it. Like, no, I can't do it.
Mm. And how long has American Idol been on, Seth? 20 years? If I'm coming up with a show, I want to come up with a successful formula where it sticks around.
Love Is Blind? I've seen commercials for this Love Is Blind.
Love Is Blind is it's a little like that. Well, it's actually they fall in love having never seen each other at all. Like they're getting to know each other with a curtain in between. Yeah, there aren't really ugly people.
There's no plants. Yeah. And by that, I mean people that look like cacti.
Right.
Yeah. There's no there.
Yeah. No, that's Love Is Blind. I feel like that's the same way Bill O'Brien goes about free agency. Like, he, you know, doesn't sit down and meet with anybody face to face. Like, a couple phone calls, here's $9 million a year.
Love Is Blind.
There you go, Randall.
I've heard tell of it, like an arranged marriage back in the day.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, like this Eric kid from Cleveland. Sure, why not? Sounds lovely.
The texts are coming in. This is where you can tell someone's listening, but like on the delay on the radio.com app, there's a show called Love Is Blind already. I know that. I've brought that up on the show before. So.
That's what I was about to say, and I didn't interrupt you because then you went on to explain that this is different. Sean's added a tweak to it, and that makes his own. That sounds like somebody that's about to sue you. That sounds like somebody from Love Is Blind.
Yeah, that would be awesome if we had the producers of big TV shows listening to the show. That'd be sweet.
Somebody says, Seth, the best part about American Idol is the people that are really bad and don't know it.
Yes.
I know, but listen, I'm going to tell you now. But watch it through this lens. Watch it and think how many of these people are genuinely mentally ill. And it's hard, man, because you start to realize, oh, they really are. Some of them are just crazy jerks, but some of them are genuinely mentally ill. And I feel bad for those people. I don't feel like I shouldn't be sitting there laughing at them on TV. I should laugh at them elsewhere, when they're trying to perform a job in our office.
Okay. Well, A, thanks for making me feel bad for watching it that way the last 20 years. And B, thanks for ruining it going forward for me, Seth. All right. We are about out of time. My friend, I will see you tomorrow 6 a.m.
Yeah. Oh, and quick Quick correction. Okay, yeah. Kobe Bryant did die in 2022. So that
there's that as well.
That feels like forever ago. It's almost like pre-corona. It feels like that didn't even happen in 2020.
We're getting a Jerry Sloan text as well. So
for the most part, most of the people that have passed away, celebrities that have died since the shutdown, have mostly been people that are at least right. of normal dying age.
Since the shutdown.
If they take Jennifer Grey at the age of 60, I will be upset with 2020.
Me too, after learning how cute she is now at age 60 after her nose job. All right, Seth, I'll see you tomorrow at 6 a.m.
Antibodies to you.
And to you as well, and antibodies to all of you as we check out here for a Tuesday. Landry Locker, John Lopez, they are in the loop. You got them next. Stay here. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.